In just a minute, I'm going to read from James chapter 2, verses 9 through 13. It's hard right now with all the bad stuff that's going on. The sicknesses we have, the hurricanes in the east, the fires in the west, the funerals we've had of late. It's hard sometimes to try to get our head around all that's happening. I'm reminded of a story of an atheistic college professor who walked into his classroom one day and wrote on the board, "God is nowhere." And they had a break in the class, and everybody went out to get a drink or go to the restroom. When they came back, somebody had moved one of the letters. They'd moved the W over to where it now read, "God is now here." And that's something we ought to remember, even during trouble. God is a present and ready help in time of trouble. And because of that, people need to find what they're looking for in God. The story of the prodigal son, he thought what he wanted out of life was to be found away from home. And so he left home. He took everything given him at home and he wasted it. He blew it. He ended up, no one would have anything to do with him. He ended up having his meals with the hogs. And finally he came to himself, which means he realized what he had wanted all along, what he really needed all along, was at home. And he went home to his father. And that's where people need to go. The first question God ever asked is, "Adam, where are you?" People want to know where God is in all the tragedies that are occurring. The real question is, where is man? Where are you? And if you're not home, you're not where you need to be. So I was thinking about all that this morning, but we're going to pick up with the lesson in James chapter 2. I would like, for context, to begin in verse 9 and read through verse 13. The lesson this morning is from verses 12 and 13. But for context, let me begin in verse 9. James says, "But if you show partiality, if you show prejudice, if you play favorites, if you discriminate, you commit sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors. For whoever shall keep the whole law and yet stumble in one point, he is guilty of all. For he who said, 'Do not commit adultery,' also said, 'Do not murder.' Now if you do not commit adultery, but you do murder, you have become a transgressor of the law. So speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment." James has said some very important things in this paragraph that we've been looking at. He says that prejudice is sin. To show partiality, favoring someone over another on the basis of some external evaluation or criteria, is sin. It's the opposite of the royal law, which is to love your neighbor as yourself. That's what God expects of us. And showing partiality is not loving your neighbor as yourself. And how we love our neighbor ought to be determined by how we love ourselves. And last week we went to Ephesians chapter 5, verse 29, and saw that every one of us loves ourselves in two ways. We nourish ourselves and we cherish ourself. That's what Paul says. "No man hates his own flesh, but every man nourishes and cherishes his own self." We take in that which is meant to make us strong, nourishment. And we value ourselves to where we don't put ourselves in harm's way. We don't take on unnecessary risk and dangers. We value ourselves. And that's how we're to treat everybody. And James says, it doesn't matter that we've avoided the big sins. And he names the two big sins in this text, doesn't he? Ask just about anybody, what are the two worst sins a person can commit? And they probably will say, well, murder and adultery. And those are the two sins that James mentions. But James' point is to discriminate, to be prejudiced, to be biased on based on external considerations is as bad, as much a violation of the law of God as murder and adultery. I said last week, the law of God is not to be looked upon as a pile of rocks. You know, if you've got a big pile of rocks and you take one rock out of the pile, nobody probably notices. You still got a pile of rocks there. That's how we think of God's law. We can overlook one or two of, or more of God's laws, but we've still got this big pile of law that we're trying to follow. That's the wrong way to think about it, James says. He says, instead, think about the law of God as a pane of glass. It doesn't matter if you only hit the pane of glass up in one corner. It's going to shatter the entire pane. It doesn't matter what sin it is we're guilty of. When we commit sin, we are a lawbreaker. And we stand judged by the law no matter what the sin is we commit. And so we've come now to verses 12 and 13 to wrap up this paragraph about prejudice. And there are three points to make from verses 12 through 13. I'll try to make these three points this morning, and that will be the outline of the lesson. And here are the three points. James gives us a caution about judgment. He gives us a criteria for judgment. And he gives us some consolation, some comfort about judgment. And the reason I speak of judgment is because in verses 12 and 13, we've got the word judgment there three times. In verse 12, it's the word judge. In verse 13, it's judgment and judgment. And what is judgment? Well, judgment is showing, making a distinction. When you make a judgment, and the Greek word is crisis. A crisis is where a decision is involved. There's been a lot of criticism lately about how people have responded to the hurricane, responded to the fire. Wrong decisions were made. And that's why you've got a crisis. The day's going to come when God's going to make a distinction about us. And because he's going to make a distinction, a judgment about us, there are some things we need to remember. And so the caution James gives us about judgment, the criteria for judgment, the comfort about judgment. Let's begin with the first, a caution. Notice that James starts with an adverb. So speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. That little adverb means you need to keep some things in mind before you do this. Before you pass judgment on someone, have you ever been quick to pass judgment on someone else? I have. Have you ever made snap judgments about people that just turned out to be absolutely wrong? And for me, I can say I've judged people critically when I didn't have a basis for doing that and found out otherwise. And I've judged people favorably and found out otherwise. James is saying, before you make a judgment about anybody, there are some things you need to consider. And what we need to consider is that while we're making judgments about others, the day is coming when a judgment will be made about us. So speak and so do, remembering that the day is coming when you're going to be judged. Now, the reason that's important to remember is because Christ taught us that how we're judged is going to depend in part on how we judged others. Let me take you to a couple of passages back in the Gospels. Turn to Matthew chapter 7. I'm going to read the first five verses here of Matthew chapter 7. And this is a well-known passage, statement of Christ, teaching of Christ. Matthew 7, verse 1. Jesus says, "Judge not that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck that's in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank that is in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Judge not that you be not judged, because whatever yardstick you hold up against someone else to judge them, that same yardstick is going to be held up against you. And if our yardstick is hypocritical, if it is hypercritical, have you ever been around somebody who just nitpicks about everything at you? I mean, they've got a comment to make about what you're wearing, about what you're doing, about this, about... I mean, they're just hypercritical. Whatever yardstick we use, Christ says, is going to be used against us. And before we make judgments, so speak and so do as those who will be judged. Now, Christ is not condemning judgments. In fact, look at verse 6. I didn't read it. He says, don't give what is holy to the dogs, and don't cast your pearls before swine. Now, carrying out that command of Christ requires judgment. We've got to make a determination if a person is a dog or a hog, as Christ is talking about. And if they're a dog, and that's the conclusion we reach about them, we're going to deal with them in a certain way. If they're a hog, a swine, we're going to deal with them a certain way. We've got to make judgments. But notice the order that Christ gives. First, judge yourself. First, take the log sticking in your eye, and then you'll see clearly enough to help your brother with the speck that's in his eye. It's very easy to see, to be critical of things we see in others and be completely blind to the fact we're guilty of some greater sin, some greater failure in ourselves. Christ says, before you look to anybody else to make a decision, a judgment about them, you look at yourself and make a judgment about yourself and take care of whatever you see there. James says back in James chapter 1, when you look into the perfect law of liberty, it's like looking into a mirror. You look into a mirror and you see yourself. And if you see you need to comb your hair or shave or wash your face, you do something about what you see in the mirror. Christ says, first judge yourself, and then you're in a position to judge others. Now turn to Matthew chapter 18. Let's see what happens if that order is not followed. In Matthew 18, starting about verse 21, Christ tells a parable. The parable involves a servant who had embezzled, misspent, and wasted a tremendous amount of the king's money. In fact, what he had misspent added up to 10,000 talents. Now, in our currency today, that would be millions and millions of dollars that he had wasted. Had nothing to show for it. And when the king finds out how badly this servant had mismanaged the funds committed to him, the king is going to have him thrown in prison, going to have his family thrown in prison, and rot in prison. And the servant begins begging. And he's delusional. Give me enough time, and I'll pay back every penny I owe you. That's like a guy on minimum wage saying, give me enough time, I'll pay you back $1 billion. It just ain't going to happen. But to the surprise of everybody, the king says, I tell you what, I'll do you one better. I'll just forgive everything. You don't have to pay me back a dime. I'll completely forgive everything you owe. And what does that servant do? He goes out and finds somebody who owed him $100. Grabs him. Starts choking him. Drags him down to the jail and has him thrown into jail and tells him, you're going to sit there until you paid me back my $100. When some of the other servants hear about this, they tell the king. When the king hears how the servant he forgave 10,000 talents had treated the man who owed him $100, the king was fit to be tied. He's angry. He's wroth in a rage. Has that servant drugged back in and destroyed. Did Christ not teach us this? To pray, Father, forgive us our transgressions as we forgive those who transgress against us. Does Christ not link His treatment of us with our treatment of others? Absolutely He does. Which is why the royal law, love your neighbor as yourself, is so important. And so we begin with a caution about judgment. We're going to be treated by Christ in eternity, consistent with how we've treated others. Then we have a criteria. After that caution, we have a criteria. And the criteria is this: so speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. And that's a curious phrase. The law of liberty. Look back to chapter 1 of James at verse 25. This is not the first time we've come across this expression in James' letter. James 1 verse 25. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues therein and is not a forgetful hearer but a doer of the work, this man will be blessed in what he does. Now, the reason law of liberty is a curious phrase is because law and liberty often seem to be at odds with one another. I mean, the number of laws we are expected to live by. How many new laws are we under now since January 1st that we weren't under a year ago this time? I mean, every year, one of the first things they mention is all the new laws that have been enacted. And those laws all tend to take away a little bit of our freedom, don't they? Here's something else that I can't do any longer. I mean, used to, I could go down and fish, just grab the fishing pole, get some worms, go down and fish, and then one year they announced, if you're going to go down to the river and fish, you better have a fishing license. You know, they just took away that freedom of me to go down and fish, and that's the way law is. Laws tend to suppress activity, suppress liberty. But James talks about the perfect law of liberty. Let me tell you why I think he calls it that. And let me remind you of the illustration I used last week from the book of Exodus. God brings Israel out of slavery. They've been slaves to the Egyptians. God sends 10 plagues, brings Israel out, parts the Red Sea, gets them all out of Egypt, and what's the first thing he does? He marches them across the Sinai Peninsula, which is a wasteland, to a mountain known as Mount Sinai, and there gives them a law. Frees them, gives them a law. You know why he gave them a law? It wasn't to put them back in slavery. I mean, he didn't bring them out of slavery just to put them back in slavery by giving them a law. You know what the purpose of that law was? It was to keep them free. It was to keep them liberated. The gospel is meant to keep us in the freedom that God's grace has provided us. I mean, we are the problem. Just like in the first point. Is it possible to be forgiven but unforgiving? Can we be forgiven and then turn right around and be unforgiving? Let me go at that from a different direction. Is there anybody here right now you're mad at? Is there anybody that you've got a grudge for? Is there anyone you think harshly of? Avoid, give the cold shoulder to, will have nothing to do with because of something they did that you're unwilling to let go. I mean, we tell people, well, I'll forgive you, but I'll never forget it. And we think in telling them that, we're being very generous. No. If we're unforgiving, we're not going to be forgiven very long. And so we've been given a law to make us into the kind of people who can stay forgiven, who can stay free from sin, who can stay liberated. That's what the gospel law is all about. Saving us from ourself. Now, James mentions adultery. He mentions murder and adultery. What the Bible says about adultery is meant to save us from ourselves. It's meant to promote blessing. You know, a lot of people look at sex, what a wonderful thing it is, why that ought to be accessible to everybody. Everybody ought to, free love. Everybody ought to be able to enjoy that. And so I grew up in a generation that promoted that attitude. And the devastation that came to my generation from not just sickness and disease, but from broken relationships, broken hearts, destroyed marriages, destroyed children, has been as bad as any fire burning in California. Because God's law was ignored, and men, instead of finding greater freedom, went back into slavery to their passions, to their lust, and death resulted. James 1:15. The criteria by which we look at others and deal with others is a law of liberty. Ronald Reagan said, government's not the answer, government's the problem. And we're not the answer either. We are our problem. And the gospel is meant to keep us in a blessed state with God. Not enslaved to sin. So we've got a caution about judgment. We've got a criteria for judgment. The law of liberty. And we've got some comfort. And I'm sure glad verse 13 is in my Bible. Because the fact of the matter is, I need the mercy of God. I'm a sinner. I sin over and over. I'm blameworthy. I'm never in a position to give myself a pat on the back for what a good boy I've been. I stand in constant need of mercy. And what I see James 2:13 saying is what Christ said in the Beatitudes. Did Christ not say, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy? Yeah, he said that. And I may not be sinless, But I sure work hard at trying to be a merciful, compassionate person, giving others the benefit of the doubt, believing the best about them, not holding them to too rigid a standard, allowing as much wobble room for them as I can, because that's what I need. That's the kind of evaluation I need from God. The last verse of Matthew 18, that parable of the servant and the 10,000 talents and the guy owed him 100. The last verse says that if we withhold mercy from those who have wronged us, God will hold mercy from we who have wronged Him. And what verse 13 says is that judgment's without mercy to the one who shows no mercy. But, and here's the good news, mercy triumphs over judgment. Judgment insists on justice. Judgment deals with our just deserts. That's the job of judgment. Judgment demands we get what's our due, what we've earned. But mercy pleads for forgiveness. Mercy pleads, don't give me what I've got coming. And James, and here's the great truth of the gospel, James says, mercy is what wins out. In fact, one commentator said it could be translated this way: mercy crows over judgment. Have you ever crowed about something? I mean, you've just been so happy, so proud, so jubilant. You just crow. Peter Pan liked to crow. You know? Mercy crows over judgment. That's grace. And that's God. So with that, we wrap up what James wants to tell us about partiality, prejudice, discrimination. May we all give ourselves to the royal law that we love our neighbor as ourselves. Thank you for listening this morning. If you're here and you're not right with God and you need to come home, like I was talking about there at the start, you need to come back to the Father, we'll do all we can to help you in that, if you would like us to. We're going to stand and sing a song now, and sometimes these songs encourage someone who knows they've got a decision to make the decision. And if you're in that spot this morning, we hope this song will encourage you to do whatever you need to do before your God. Together while we stand and sing.
I have decided.